Welcome to Teaching Writing. My name is Roger Graves. I'm the Director of Writing Across the Curriculum at the University of Alberta, an Associate Director of the Center for Teaching and Learning, and a Professor in English and Film Studies. Today's podcast is called Genre, Form, and Purpose. I talked about audience and purpose in the past several episodes, so if you haven't taken those in, maybe listen to them if you find this one a little too mystifying. Because I don't know about you, but the first time that I heard writing studies people going on about genre, I really didn't know what they were talking about. I got that the genre of a document was important. I mean, that seemed almost self-evident to me, but I appreciated the emphasis. Genre matters. Writing a quote-unquote book review is different from writing a review of the literature in a research article. Different audiences, different purposes, different textual conventions. So let's take a few minutes to look at where the interest in genre came from and explore and follow some writing studies researchers down the research rabbit hole of genre to see what impossible things we can make ourselves believe. First, some definitions. This podcast has the word format in the title because instructors invariably have little trouble communicating to students what the form of an assignment should look like. Here's an example. Length of assignment, page 1, cover page. Page 2, abstract. Page 3 to 6, introduction, body of paper, / conclusion. Page 7, reference list. Number of references is based on the discretion of the student. APA format. APA format is required. So that is the form. It's called the shape and the structure. A printed or typed document with blank spaces for insertion of required or requested information. That's what the Merriam-Webster Dictionary talks about. When you check out the definition for format, you find that it says things like the shape, size, and general makeup, or a general plan of organization or arrangement. Form hints at what genre researchers focus on, quote, shape and structure, not just filling out a form. Rick Coe, a former professor at Simon Fraser University in British Columbia and a Kenneth Burke scholar, was the first person I listened to that really helped me understand what genre researchers were getting at. Coe linked Malinowski's concept of, quote, language as symbolic action, unquote, to both the new rhetoric, as opposed to the old rhetoric of classical period, and the systemic functional linguist's focus on what language does. The work we do with words, the things we hope to accomplish with a text or an utterance. Indeed, as Cheryl Glenn has argued, with our silences, we also try to communicate things. In Kenneth Burke's book called Language as Symbolic Action, he begins by defining people as symbol-using animals moved by a sense of order who use language to build their own realities. So we use language to understand and interact with the world. We use language to get things done. Genres are not just the format or structures of things. They also contain social attitudes, motives, and political and cultural implications. So business communication genres, for example, aren't just simple tools. And this is where I think any tool metaphor for this whole discussion breaks down. When students first attempt to create a resume or write a cover letter for a job application, you can see the confusion in their eyes and in their words. The structures and layout of their first attempts reveal that they have not understood how to use the tool in order to get work done. Which is to say, in this case, to get a job interview. They flail around quite a bit, introducing all kinds of non-essential information and omitting crucial, required, expected information. It can be quite a mess. Even those who use templates and thus take out the most obvious visual signs of confusion can reveal their lack of unfamiliarity of the social norms and the politeness rituals, such as a salutation, that are required and expected. And so the untutored don't get job interviews and are left to wonder why. Well, genre researchers stress the functional aspect, including the rules of the genre game. Who should initiate a communication? What makes for an appropriate response to an email invitation? And even, who is allowed to respond to an email? Who has the power and responsibility to comment on some issue that has been introduced? One key concept is called uptake. For example, When someone brings up a topic in a conversation, do others in the conversation or email string respond to the topic, or do they ignore it? Does it get, quote-unquote, taken up? So all of this points to the social norms and conventions surrounding a communication, and each genre is coded with these norms and expectations. The problem is that people new to the genre and new to, say, an organization can have a lot of difficulty ferreting out these norms and expectations. Often people with long standing in the community, and so if we think about professors and middle managers as those kind of people, have high or even unreal expectations about how fast an individual will be able to figure out the course norms or the company expectations for communication. Now, as people move along in their academic and workplace careers, they encounter more and more genres. One point where people encounter large breaks or gaps is the transition from secondary or high school expectations of written work and the expectations of post-secondary instructors. In high school contexts, standardization and structure, often as represented in the five-paragraph theme, win the day and lead to success. In university, the strategy that produced success finds failure instead, which is to say, a C-level grade. University instructors recognize competent writing, but they value sophisticated writing. According to the thousands of writing assignments that we reviewed as part of our writing assignment research, few instructors share models of good writing with their students, and few share the grading criteria they will be using. About 1 in 3 will do that, it turns out. For students, this means that they are lacking key information about how their work will be read. The features of the genre they are attempting to produce remain obscure. As an instructor, what should you do? Well, identify a genre that is common to your field and discipline, one that students are likely either to have already attempted or one that is very likely they will have to attempt in future courses. If you are writing in a work context, help others by assigning the same writing task to them several times and work with them to refine their knowledge of the key characteristics of that writing task. Our research shows that some disciplines, most even, assign an incredibly wide variety of genres to their students, 58 in one faculty, 54 in another, 59 in another. This creates an impossible situation for students. They cannot possibly master all of these genres and all the variation from one instructor to another. A related problem is the naming of assignments. Instructors are either extremely creative when they name assignments, something that confuses students because they're not sure of the genre, then there's just too many different names for the same thing, or some other instructors will refuse to even give an assignment a name. In one faculty we studied, almost half of assignments were called, quote, assignment. One of the first things an instructor can do is pick a common genre and give it a name that tells students what kind of writing they're being asked to produce. The second thing I would recommend is that you build some context for the writing. I love the following assignment that comes from a science-based forestry-type course. It asks students to write an environmental assessment report, and yes, that is the title. So students know right away that they are writing a report, and that's a common genre for them. The premise of the assignment is that students are working for an environmental consulting firm. The assignment identifies the kind of data that they're going to need to find out and report on, and it's a linked or scaffolded assignment, which is really important. That's something that's very common we found in our study. Many, many instructors are using this, perhaps more than half the time they're using linked assignments. So that's where the first part of an assignment, say a proposal for a topic to use, is the first part of the assignment. It gets graded and then gets back to students, who then may move on to the next part. So by linking those two assignments, they're kind of invoking a kind of process for students to follow. And the key part of that process is that it gives them some feedback of whether or not they're on the right track. This assignment also has another part of the linked part of it. It has a separate grade for the quality of student feedback. So students are scheduled to give feedback to each other, to their peer group, and then they get a grade on the feedback that they provide. There are so many things to like about this assignment. They spend a few paragraphs building the context for the assignment, making sure students understand where they are in the structure of the organization, what it is they're being asked to produce, and why. There's a peer review aspect to it, which I love. That increases learning. There's a clear genre that's important to their future career. That's the report genre, environmental assessment reports. And there's a great explanation, which I haven't really talked about yet, of the grading criteria. Finally, the audience for this assignment is not the instructor. The instructor will read it and is a sit-in for that audience, but the real audience is that the different people who are going to be reading the assessment report and who it will be submitted to. So I'll leave you with that great example of what to do. If you found this podcast useful, I hope you'll follow it and pass along the link to your colleagues. You can find more information at wecanwrite.ca or the Center for Teaching and Learning at the University of Alberta. To reach me, you can email roger.graves@ualberta.ca.